Welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. It's where we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK University Medical Center in Edison, and it's part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. Our guest this time around is Dr. Savitra Bhandari, Pediatric Neurology Attending Assistant Professor of Neuroscience at JFK University Medical Center. Welcome to the program.
Hi, good morning, Joel.
Good morning, good morning. So tell me, real quickly, I know you've been there for a while. Tell me what you do there at the neuroscience department.
Yeah. So I'm a child neurologist or pediatric neurologist. So I see children from birth to 21 years of age with all types of neurological disorders.
Okay.
Like autism spectrum disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, concussion, all types of headaches, febrile seizures, epilepsy, Hicks and Tourette syndrome, and some neurogenetic conditions.
One of the things I definitely want to accomplish during this conversation is the differences between ASD, ADHD, ADD, and we'll get into all that. But let's start with ASD. Now, that's Asperger's syndrome, correct?
Actually, that is the old term. In 2013, we switched from DSM-4 to DSM-5. DSM is Diagnostic Statistical Manual, so the diagnostic scale we use to make the diagnosis. So before 2013, we used to make autism diagnosis, Asperger's syndrome, and PDD-NOS, which is pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified. But later on, they modified the criteria in 2013, and they put all these criteria under one umbrella term, autism spectrum disorder.
Okay, so ASD covers all of it.
Yes.
Okay, so anybody, and I know there probably were many people wondering, what's the difference between ASD, ADD, ADHD? It's all one now, and it is ASD.
Autism spectrum disorder is different than ADHD. So we will talk about ADHD later, but autism spectrum
disorder. No, I'm glad we're clearing this up. All right, so let's start with autism spectrum disorder. Tell us exactly what that is.
Yeah, so autism spectrum disorder is a neurodevelopmental disability, and it's caused by differences in the brain. So we still don't know what exactly causes, but we have a couple of things to talk about. So there are multiple causes of autism spectrum disorder. Some are like genetic causes, and some are environmental causes like pregnancy complication, birth complication, advanced paternal age, and some other stuff which can cause, like, you know, the brain develops a little bit differently than normal children.
So once you diagnose, someone is diagnosed, what is the next step?
Yeah, so the early diagnosis and early intervention is the key, because brain constantly develops from birth to 18 and above. So that's why awareness is very important. Children with autism spectrum disorders have social communication and interaction problem. They have some restricted and repetitive behaviors. And the diagnosis of autism can be difficult since there is no medical test. So we call it as a clinical diagnosis. There is no blood test or MRI or CT scan or genetic test to make the diagnosis. So once you diagnose the child, then he should get like all the therapies so that his brain can develop a little bit like normal, whatever we expect from, like, you know, age appropriate behaviors.
Okay, when you say normal, it just means age-appropriate behavior. What are some of the signs, I don't know, what age, let's say I have an 8-year-old, what are some of the things that you might notice in an 8-year-old child that tell you that they have ASD?
Yeah, that's a good question. So again, we call it as a spectrum. So no two children with diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder are same. So they have like different profile combinations. So some children have, like, you know, social communication problems. So, for example, they don't give good eye contact. They don't use finger to point something. They are not connected with the surroundings, kind of like, you know, self-directed. They have difficulty holding conversation, making friends, and to adjust in the social, like, you know, gathering. Then the second is they have, like, restricted interests, like, you know, they need certain things in certain way, and they cannot take the change because they don't know how to adjust with the change.
Okay.
So we call it as a trouble transitioning. And some children are very hypersensitive or hyposensitive to the surroundings, like smell, taste, sounds. They cover their ears. They become very restless when there is, like, you know, toilet flushing or vacuum cleaner. All this, like, you know, simple routine stuff, but they cannot adjust with that. And also they have repetitive behaviors like flapping their hands, spinning around, lining up toys, toe walking. So all these kind of certain things, you know, so you can see and making diagnosis and helping child with getting like proper school placement, like IEP, which is individualized education plan, like special education class with, and they might need different services based on their symptoms, like speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy, behavioral therapy. There are some like, you know, one interesting therapy called as hippotherapy, which is horse riding, but not like fancy way. It is like type of therapy. Some like animal assisted therapy, water therapy, music therapy, aqua therapy. There are like, you know, so many different therapies to help these children. And then school placement is very important.
Now, how do you, I do have a couple of questions about what you just shared, but you just mentioned school placement is important. How do you decide on the best spot for your child?
Yeah. So there are like three levels of autism spectrum disorder. So level 1, 2, and 3. 1 means high functioning autism, which was like similar to Asperger syndrome. So they usually have good speech, but they still don't know how to use that speech properly. But their IQ, like, you know, functioning level is very high. So they might need like, you know, little help. Then level 2 and level 3. Level 3 has like many times they are nonverbal, lot of behavioral problems. So they need a small class with extra teacher and then all the therapy. Sometimes they have like a lot of behavioral issues like aggression and then frustration, throwing tantrums. So they might need help at home also. We call it as a home ABA therapy. Applied behavioral analysis is one of the type of behavioral therapy they need it.
At what age is a child normally diagnosed?
Some children start showing symptoms at 15, 16 months also. And sometimes they come at like, you know, 4 and 5 years of age because parents might not be aware and child might not have a lot of symptoms. So child starts going to school, then school teacher notices and then they recommend neurological evaluation. So average age is like, you know, 2 to 4 years of age. Mm-hmm. But again, depending upon like, you know, their symptoms and awareness of the parents and school.
I understand that when you talk about a 15-month-old, one of the symptoms might be that they're not speaking, they're not babbling. Is that correct?
Yeah, not babbling, speech delay, as well as they don't have eye contact, and then they are not even interactive with the surroundings. Because 15-month-old should be able to give you eye contact, give smile back, so you don't see those things in small children.
Has there been an instance where a parent self-diagnosed their child, but then it turns out they didn't have ASD, or is it obvious?
Yeah, that is possible, you know. Sometimes they read on internet and then they come with their own diagnosis. But that's why we are here, to guide them properly and make the correct diagnosis.
Right, yeah, exactly. There at JFK University Medical Center, that's where you want to go if you think that your infant may have some of these symptoms. So when we talk about the spectrum, everyone says, oh, they're on the spectrum. Is what you were talking about earlier, that is the different grades. It doesn't matter where they are on the spectrum, right? The fact is that they need some sort of therapy, some sort of help, if they're on it at all.
Correct. So falling on the spectrum is important. And then based on their symptoms, you can make like, you know, what type of help they need.
So what would be the least or the lowest part of the spectrum, like the least amount of symptoms? What would be someone who's on the spectrum? Could it be someone or a child who doesn't know them would have no idea that they were on the spectrum? And is that an okay term, saying they're on the spectrum?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
ASD, or still people use term autism, but this is the whole autism spectrum disorder.
Right. You know, what would be the smallest amount of signs that you would see someone who's the lowest on the spectrum? Is it low to high?
No, it's high functioning autism, because it's a functionality, right? So high functioning autism means they might have good speech, communication skills, learning abilities, but they might not have good eye contact. They might not understand, like, you know, jokes and sarcasm.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
Sometimes they might talk inappropriately, even though they have normal speech and, like, you know, so that kind of, like, you know, mild social communication problem.
Mild.
Eye contact. Yeah.
This is JFK Spotlight on Health, and we're talking with Dr. Savitra Bhandari, pediatric neurology attending assistant professor of neuroscience at JFK University Medical Center, where she sees kids for ASD. Let's move on to ADHD, right? So we have ASD, and mm-hmm. then there's ADHD. They're different. How are they different?
Yeah, so ADHD is one of the most common neurodevelopmental disorder of childhood. So this is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. This is something different. Child can be super smart, and some people claim, like, you know, Albert Einstein also had ADHD. We don't know, but they claim.
Okay.
So this is considered as a because of some chemical imbalances in the brain. So because of that, they have higher functioning, like executive functioning disorder. So they might have inattention, hyperactivity, and impulsivity.
So what are some of the signs of ADHD?
So the child with ADHD might daydream a lot, fidget or lose things a lot, fidget a lot, then forget the things, talk too much, make careless mistakes or take unnecessary risks, have a hard time resisting temptation. They have trouble taking turns and have difficulty getting along with others.
But not all of those things at once. It could just be one or two, correct?
Yeah, there are like certain requirements of criteria. We have like three sections of symptoms. One is inattention, and then second is hyperactivity, and third is impulsivity. So based on whatever the combination of symptoms they have and they meet the diagnostic criteria, then there are three subtypes of ADHD. So predominantly inattentive presentation, which in olden terms, we used to call it as a ADD without H. But we are no more using that term because
okay.
it comes under ADHD. Even if child doesn't have hyperactivity, because H stands for hyperactivity, but still we consider it as a ADHD inattentive subtype. And second is ADHD hyperactive impulsive subtype. And if a child has all the symptoms from all three sections, then we call it as a ADHD combined type.
Combined.
So there are three subtypes of ADHD, yes.
I see. So now when someone comes into your office and they think that their child may have ADHD, what's the process? What's the first thing? And they say, I think my child has the symptoms of ADHD. Where do you go from there?
Yeah. So again, this is also clinical diagnosis. So we, again, don't have any test, genetic test or imaging or electroencephalogram. So we have to go with, like, you know, clinical, like observation, taking proper history, thorough examination. And we usually use some diagnostic scales for parents and teachers so that, you know, we can get more information about child symptoms at school as well as at home. And when we put all things together, if they meet the diagnostic criteria, then we go ahead and give the diagnosis of ADHD.
Dr. Bhandari, what are some of the other things that you treat? We covered ASD, we covered mm-hmm. ADHD. What are some of the other things you treat?
Yeah. So the other thing is common concussion. So this is the mild traumatic brain injury. So this is very common, but in children, like, you know, concussion is underdiagnosed. So I want, people should know more about this concussion and more awareness, because that can prevent a lot of complications. So early recognition is very important. So children can get concussion by, like, you know, falling on the ground or sports or motor vehicle accidents. So there are certain different, like, you know, causes to have concussion. So the first thing, once we have the diagnosis of concussion, they can have symptoms like headache, vomiting, dizziness, light sensitivity, sleep disturbances. Sometimes they get, like, you know, dazed. They don't even talk, some memory lapse. So based on the clinical symptoms, we decide whether child needs CT scan or not. Not every child with concussion needs a CT scan, but the diagnosis is very important. And then first 48 hours after the head injury, we recommend brain rest or cognitive rest. Brain rest means no electronics, no school, and just like complete bed rest. So that helps with the recovery of the brain very fast. So that part is very important, and all parents should be aware of that need for 48-hour brain rest.
Let's talk about a concussion, a mild concussion, if that is even a term that you use, but then also a severe concussion. So a child can be playing soccer, and they mm-hmm. head the ball, and they can get a concussion from that, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so is that something that, if untreated, could get worse, or can it just go away? And if the child never quote unquote bangs their head again, they'll be okay? Or is there damage being done when the child has some of those symptoms? Let's say they whatever they do, head the soccer ball or what have you, and they have the vomiting and the dizziness, but then after a day, they're okay. Does it still need to be treated at that point, or what do you recommend to your patients?
Absolutely. So recognition and then 48 hours, brain rest is very important for mm-hmm. the recovery. So there is one term called as second impact syndrome. So for example, child is still recovering from the first concussion. Concussion usually takes 2 weeks to 3 months for the complete recovery, because it's that energy and metabolism of the brain cells gets impaired because of this head trauma.
Wow.
So, for example, child's brain is recovering from first concussion and he gets another concussion. That can have very bad effects. So brain gets swollen. We call it as edema, and brain can get herniation, and 50% chance there is a chance of death also. So that's why it is very, very important to recognize and intervene first concussion.
I see. So, you answered my question, but I just want to clarify, if a child gets a concussion, and we're talking about a concussion where they get the symptoms that we mentioned, it takes 2 months to heal. It could take 2 months to heal.
2 months, average time.
Just because their headache goes away and they don't have any other symptoms, there still is damage in there. So if they get if they have more trauma within, say, a week, for example, that could do more damage than if they didn't get it checked out in the first place, because if you got it checked out in the first place and it was diagnosed, they wouldn't have gotten that second trauma because they would be resting.
Correct. Correct. That's what there are some guidelines when to go back to sport or how to go back to school also. You have to do step-by-step rehabilitation with modifications in school, and they get to be checked by professional person before they return back to sports. That is the very important part,
And that usually takes a couple of months, you said?
Yeah, depending upon trauma, So mm-hmm. whether it is a first concussion or how bad it is and how many symptoms and all that stuff,
So if I come in with my child and my child has a concussion, the symptoms I mentioned, they threw up, they vomited, they have a headache, they're dizzy. Mm-hmm. What's the first thing that you say to a parent with a child like that?
Yeah, so I explain them what is the definition of concussion, what to look for, and what are the precautions you should be taking. So again, as I mentioned before, 2 days, don't send your child to school.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2 days, if his symptoms are still there, he can still resume the school. He doesn't have to stay in the home even with symptoms like headache or anything. But he can go step by step, maybe as tolerated, a couple of hours or half day school, or taking breaks in between. So that kind of stuff, so we treat every concussion as a unique snowflake, because two concussions are not same,
Right, I understand. So if it isn't, mm-hmm. if it doesn't happen in sports, so I'm sure you get patients where the kid wants to get back to playing that sport, but let's say they just bang their head. What are some mm-hmm. of the things you tell them to avoid, other than obviously physical activity, when they have a concussion?
Electronics is the best important thing, because parents are usually people don't understand. They say I don't want to, I'm not going to send child to 2 days to school, But when child is at home, he's going to be on playing games. So that part is very important. When you say brain rest or cognitive rest, no electronics also. And then for electronics also, you can introduce half an hour, 1 hour a day, slowly, it's everything rehabilitation kind of thing.
So it's not just physical. It's not like you're trying to avoid a bump. You also need to avoid brain activity. How about just watching television, watching a TV show, as opposed to a video game?
No, screen means TV, computer.
No screens. Okay.
Everything, all screens come under the screen time.
Okay, I apologize if you said this also, but what about reading?
Reading also, initially they should not be, 1st 48 hours, they should not be doing any mental or physical activities.
No, I misunderstood. Yeah. I know, the 1st 48 hours, I get that. But after that, what can they do then?
Yes, it's a kind of as tolerated. So they can go to school, resume school, maybe half day or a couple of hours a day, and they can do reading or something, but not standardized tests or quizzes. So you have to go step by step, and we have to work with the school. We always give letter with the recommendation, and then closely monitoring the patient, and then until he gets completely cleared, from us. But they can resume the school. They don't have to stay in the home after 48 hours.
Right. After 48 hours, that's the key right there.
Yeah.
not related to concussions, people get migraines.
Yes.
Give me an example of, there's different types of migraines, I would imagine, right?
Migraines are like, you know, actually three types. One is with aura. So they get some like, you know, sensory or visual, like tunnel vision, flashing lights, and then like, you know, some visual changes. And there is like migraine without aura, which is more common. And then in pediatric age group, there are some migraine variants. So if you have heard about like Alice in Wonderland syndrome, so they get some visual distortions before having headache, or sometimes they don't even have headache, but they get these like, you know, kind of symptoms. This another term is abdominal migraine. So instead of having pain in the head, they will get belly pain. And then third is cyclic vomiting syndrome. So there are like certain migraine variants, but that is in the younger population. And as they go around puberty, so they outgrow of these migraine variants and they will start getting classic migraine, like, you know, throbbing headache or the forehead or temples and photosensitivity, sound sensitivity, nausea, vomiting, blurry vision, depending upon, like, you know, they can have different combination of symptoms.
Okay. Well, before we wrap up, I really enjoyed our conversation, by the way. I really appreciate you being here, Dr. Savitra Bhandari.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. What advice do you give parents, just in general, about their kids? I mean, you deal with kids on a regular basis. You see all kinds of children, all kinds of examples. You know, what advice do you give parents in general?
So what I think, like, you know, more than diagnosis, medication, and some therapies, the lifestyle modifications are very important. So they should be eating healthy food, avoiding all these artificial colors, artificial sugars, and all the prepared foods most of the time as much as possible. They should start their day with high-protein breakfast. And a lot of children, I see, like, you know, they avoid hydration, so they are just drinking, like, Cokes and juices or something. They can use that, but water, pure water is very important. Good hydration is the key. Then 1 hour before bedtime, I recommend turning off all electronics. So that is like every patient I have to tell. So sleep quality is very, very, very important because of this digital and all this, like, you know, electronics. It is impacting very negatively on the sleep quality. And everything depends on the sleep, like how many hours of sleep and what quality of sleep, like, you know, child is getting. That all depends on their behaviors, like, you know, next day. If child is like fully rested, next day he will have better focus, better attention, and they don't have anxiety and behaviors are like better. They are not irritable. So because child's brain, they're small children and their brain is maturing and developing. So these lifestyle things are very, very important. So parents should be aware of all these things. So not just going for diagnosis and treatment, but you have to fix all these like simple things at home. Consistent parenting, both parents or any adults in the family, everybody should be on the same page. And there should be positive parenting, negative parenting, good balance of that, because not every time, like, you know, same thing works, you know. So these things are very, very important. And at the same time, parents should be aware of these conditions, because autism, ADHD, everybody is now becoming more aware. Otherwise, child is struggling and then parents are not aware and then they get late diagnosis. And by the time it might have impacted on his academic performance and some, like, you know, they might develop like low self-esteem because they're not doing good in school. So early diagnosis, awareness is very important.
Doctor, thank you so much. Dr. Savitra Bhandari, pediatric neurology attending, assistant professor of neuroscience at JFK University Medical Center. Thank you for being on the program.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
This has been JFK Spotlight on Health, brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. Keep getting better. For more info, go to jfkmc.org. Or you can call 732-321-7010. That's 732-321-7010. For a podcast of this program, go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com. I'm Joel Katz.